Welcome to Flunking the Written, a fully spoiled Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast in which two Uber fans break down every episode of the show. Join Kimberly and Megan every other Tuesday as they overanalyze each scene and discuss the Buffyverse at large. Now let's meet up with the Scoobies and get into this episode of Flunking the Written.
What can I say? I flunked the written.
All right, Kim, it is time to get into our discussion of The Harsh Light of Day, which was written by Jane Espenson and directed by James A. Cotner. And the DVD blurb is, as Buffy begins a new relationship, Spike returns to Sunnydale in search of a fabled ring which allows vampires to walk unharmed in the light of day.
Which is pretty much what happens.
Yeah, the title of this episode has always bothered me because I feel like The episode is more about these failed relationships and the girls wanting something out of the relationships that the guys either don't understand or don't want.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's, you know, named after Harsh Light of Day, and that's also this ring thing that I don't really get the ring. The ring never really made sense to me. It's a ancient thing that exists
in Sunnydale.
For, you know, no reason. That's, like, it's not even that hard for them to find.
And if this is a gem that can do that, like, where's the rest? Like, did it come off a stone? Like, where did this gem come from?
Yeah.
Did someone put
like,
a spell
was
on it,
it? Was it, yeah. How did it come to be? What was the actual stuff? And, like, if this is possible, then surely it's possible again. And,
yeah.
Like, I mean, this feels like it should be a bigger deal than it is, like the ability for a vampire to not only walk in sunlight, but also to be basically immortal while wearing it. I mean, I'm not sure if beheading would still work. It would certainly potentially make it to where they could no longer use their body, but they might still be alive. I don't know how that works. We didn't get to that part of the experimentation of it. But I mean, it's a very powerful thing to just kind of throw in and then get rid of, and then not ever speak of again. But we get a lot of that, I feel like, in both this and season one of Angel, where there's just like some really out there things because they want to tell a certain story or do something, like just something fun. But I feel like the ring isn't for this episode, it's for the Angel episode. The ring is just something to kind of makes sense on why Spike's back in town, even though it, you know, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense that Spike's the one that discovered it and was looking for it. I don't know what his motivation specifically led him to discover this a myth type item, but this ring purely exists for the Angel episode because it really doesn't do a whole lot here. As soon as Spike gets it, there's a fight with Buffy that just happens to be in daylight rather than at night. And then it's the same old shenanigans and Spike gets away because Buffy lets him. Because of that plot armor he has. So we'll actually get into our scene by scene breakdown now, because that seems like a good idea. Before I just skip to the end and discuss all that.
For this episode, I could not find a script.
Mm-hmm.
I only have a transcript of what actually happened. I don't have any, like, before it was shot script where there's, like, little bitty scenes that we've never heard of before. So that will not be happening. I only have a transcript. Although I have found a script for the next episode. So that'll start going back to normal. For some reason, this one just doesn't exist online. It's weird. So
there is some deleted scenes listed in the wiki. So I'll try to reference those. I just pulled that up.
So we start in the bronze and Dingoes Ate My Baby is playing.
Mm-hmm.
And Willow and Buffy are chatting and they're chatting about Parker, who is there. And Willow
has a reflection
that he does have a reflection. Willow mentions that Buffy has spent all week with him, which is not really, it's something you always forget watching this episode because it seems like it's kind of like a one night stand.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really not. She spends a whole week with this guy.
Yeah. Like, he's like committed.
He's committed to this
one night stand.
Yeah.
Like, he puts in the effort, at least.
And then Buffy's like, oh, just, we hung out just incessantly. And then Oz comes over to the table and they continue talking about Parker. And Parker comes up and wants to know if he can walk Buffy home because it's not real safe out there.
Mm-hmm.
So they all grin at each other, of course, because, you know, it's Buffy. And Buffy leaves with Parker. And then we cut to, I guess the night is over and Dingo's Ate My Baby is loading up the van with all their equipment and stuff to leave. And there's like a little bit of chatter. But then Devin and Oz go back inside to get stuff and for some unknown reason leave Willow outside of the Bronze at night by herself. And I feel like Oz and Willow and probably even Devin should know better than that at this point. But they don't. And they just leave her there.
I'll have something to add to the Devin bit at the end of this whole scene. Because Devin should definitely know better. It is nice that when they're doing their chit-chatting and talking about having people glued to the seats and that whole bit, that he's just like, oh, we're going to do great in L.A. So it's already setting this up. There's a couple things I noticed in this episode.
That they're going to L.A. That they've already got a gig.
They're setting it up to where they're going to have the crossover, which I love. I love Oz on Angel so much.
I love all the crossovers. I wish there were more crossovers. There are not enough. And I mean this for every single season of Buffy and Angel that were concurrent.
Yep.
There are not enough crossovers at all.
Yeah.
But, okay, go ahead.
Well, and even just mentions would be good, too. Like, just mentioning people from the other show a little bit more would have been something.
Like, because, like, the people, like, the new people, I want to meet each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Tara and Fred.
Yeah.
Or Gunn and Giles. Like, where are these combinations that we should get to see that we don't get to see?
God. And even just reuniting, having, like, Wesley and Giles late game interact again and be like, holy crap.
Lorne and anybody. when we get deep into Angel, you'll discover I'm a big fan of Lorne.
Yes.
Yes.
Anyway, so they do leave Willow by herself. In this dangerous, dark area behind the Bronze at night in Sunnydale. And, but it's fine. It's just harmony. Harmony's fine. It's just harmony. And, they talk about their summer vacations and Harmony's like, I wanted to go to France, but you know, that didn't work out. But she said she was dying to see the stores, which is nice. And then they have a little back and forth about museums. Which results in Harmony saying that Willow's very funny, yes. And she says that Willow hasn't changed a bit, and Willow says, no, you neither. And then this was Harmony's like, maybe a little, and Vamp's face.
Just so cringe.
Just
so
a cringe. Little bit. Just a little bit.
Oh,
yeah.
Maybe a little. It's like, aw.
Aw.
And then tries to eat Willow.
Yeah, yum yums. But, you know, through the power of some weird editing where somehow Oz is suddenly on the other side of them. I don't like, there's some weird cuts in this, but anyway, Oz comes back and
saves the day
with a mic stand, and Willow pulls out a cross. And they fend Harmony off, but she's just like, well, you can't hide behind your boyfriend forever, and I have a boyfriend too, la 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 la, and runs off in true Harmony fashion. It's beautiful. I love every second of it. But there is a line here that's cut right after she leaves. Devin's supposed to come back out and say that that it was weird because that looked like Harmony. I saw her get bit at graduation. So
nice. That would have been good to see.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we cut to Parker and Buffy, and they are strolling along the street and talking about hobbies and interests. And Buffy's like, yeah, mostly I hang out. Parker says, yeah, I was into that for a while. Which I get, Stan Parker, but that's funny. Mm-hmm. Then he, like, sees the scar on her neck and is like, what's that? And I feel like, and I don't know if it's maybe because I just don't like Parker, but I feel like this is kind of early in a relationship to be asking personal questions about scars. Like, you don't ask that. Where'd you get the scar? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Buffy says it was an angry puppy, which is a very good description of Angel, an angry puppy. Parker says all his scars are psychological and tells a story about how his father died, but it taught him to seize the day and mm-hmm. he hates guys that are all dark and brooding to give me love. And Volpe's like, I've never met that.
My notes on this are all over the place, but I feel like I want to go back to the scar because that scar is super, super prominent in the close shot that they have. And I know that they don't like put that scar on Sarah Michelle Gellar every time that she shows that side of her neck.
They do
and
not.
It's the most
for this.
It's the most inconsistent thing ever to be like, look at this huge scar that you have that's obviously a bite that you should have totally healed completely from by this point. And it's just, it happens again in Buffy versus Dracula, where it just appears magically when they need to reference it and then disappears all other times. So Parker's the worst. We can all agree that Parker's the worst. But like this performance and the charm and the back and forth and even like a little bit of like fun chemistry and just like the humor of it all and the way that it's all presented. I like the actor who's portraying Parker a lot, and I like the fact that it is like kind of a genuine charm that he has, but also on rewatches you can see through the genuine charm.
It is.
Yeah. It's like a really spot on performance.
I was wondering when I was prepping for this, I was really wondering, I was like, did I like him the first time I saw this? Like, did I fall for it too? Did I really think this was going to be a thing? And I can't remember.
Yeah.
Because watching Parker, all I can remember is you're so fake.
Yeah.
You're so fake. And so, like, it's not charming to me.
Mm-hmm.
It all seems very cringy and contrived and fake to me whenever I see everything he says. And I'm like, Buffy, you're smarter than this.
But the thing
is, I don't know if I thought that the first time.
I don't know if she is either, because this feels like the same kind of stuff that any of her like random side crushes, like look back at Owen, look back at Owen, Scott. Yeah. They're both like those kind of phony deep guys.
Yeah, that aren't actually deep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, true.
So Buffy has a type.
She does have a type. It's this or vampire.
Yeah. It's either really phony, like douchebag guys or vampires.
Owen, Ford, Scott, Parker, they're all pretentious.
Yeah.
But Riley's not.
Yeah, Riley's like the ultimate wild card. He doesn't fit in any of the boxes.
Riley was most definitely the work rebound. He's like, oh, this guy, I work with him and we have all this in common, so we should date.
Plus,
even though they don't really have it, the chemistry and the together stuff, but they're like, this should work, so let's make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, he's really tall and can reach stuff from the top shelf. As a short person, that is very valuable.
Where was I at there? That I was in Five Below, and a lady walked up to me and was like, can you help me? And I was like, I don't work here. And she's like, I was wondering how she thought I worked there because my kids were with me. And she goes, oh, no, I can't reach this. And it was on the top shelf. And so I got it. Oh, okay. You're just wanting me because I'm tall.
Yeah.
You didn't think I worked here.
Maybe that's all Buffy saw in Riley. He was just really tall. There's a convenience to that. I mean, she can jump like 30 feet in the air, but still. Where are we? What are we discussing? Something about Parker?
Oh, we were talking about the scar and then how he is kind of making fun of guys who are dark and broody.
Yep. And then talking about, you know, don't want to put things off because life's short and all of that. And they have their little back and forths about all of that deep stuff. Buffy talks about how she drowned a couple of years ago and that, you know, she doesn't like putting stuff off either. And then she asks, what is he going to regret not doing when he goes to bed tonight? And he says that he's going to regret being too nervous to ask Buffy to the Wolf House party, and then pauses and then starts to ask her, and she says yes. And like,
you've hung out all week. Why is he nervous to ask you to a party? Well,
yeah, like, it's,
you've incessantly hung out all week.
It's clear she's into you, dude.
Yeah.
He's playing this like, oh, charm. I'm just really shy.
Being a little too much. But again, I cannot remember the first time I watched it if that was something I thought then, or if I was like, oh, yeah, Gigi had to ask you
and
out.
And it's so like, sweet, you know? It is kind of cute. Like, if I didn't at this point know Parker was the way Parker was, I think that way of asking someone out, of saying, responding to that question and saying, this is what I'm nervous about, and then starting to ask the question and her saying yes, like that back and forth, like the chemistry is there. And that's what kills me the most, is because, like, in a weird way, I think the chemistry here works better than the chemistry that she has with Riley.
See, I always thought Riley, I liked the character of Riley, but I always thought that the chemistry with Riley was kind of forced.
Yeah. And so, like, watching this, which is, you know, Parker, and you hate Parker, but, like, the actors have great chemistry, and it just seems very natural, their back and forth. And then it just breaks you all the more later on when Buffy realizes. Anyway, we'll get to that part. But now we're at Giles's apartment. I love Giles's apartment. I think I've mentioned this before, but I would live in Giles's apartment and be happy.
I like his apartment, too.
And Xander's there helping out. He is organizing books in this crazy system called the alphabet. And here's a fun fact about Megan that I feel like everybody needs to know. But apparently at a young age, Megan decided that she needed to learn how to say the alphabet backwards. And this does make alphabetizing very hard.
Doing it backwards?
Like, I can say, I know my ABCs forwards and backwards, but when I actually put stuff in alphabetical order, I have to think about the order, like, twice as hard, because I have to remember which direction I'm going in. Like, alphabetizing things does actually confuse me, but I'm also dyslexic, so that might have something to do with it. Anya's in this episode. That was a surprise to me. I forgot that this was the episode that she came back in. I was just like, oh my God. What a delightful occurrence. I'm so happy.
Yay, Anya.
She just walks into Giles' apartment and mentions that you should lock your door, which I think we've mentioned thousands of times at this point.
Yeah.
Emma Caulfield's just on point, and this is like the moment when I knew for sure that this was a Jane Espenson episode, because of the way that the dialogue works here. It's just so her style. But Anya just coming in and being like, I need to talk to Xander. Go away.
Yeah.
And then being like, just awkwardly pausing and smiling, and then being like, okay, he's not leaving. Xander, come with me. Like, just a beautiful performance.
And then she abruptly asks,
where's our relationship going?
Our what? Our who?
Relationship. What kind do we have, and what is it progressing toward?
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of a start for everyone. Like, wait, what? Including Xander.
I always we have a relationship. And she's like, yeah, we went to prom.
Our one and only date. And then she tells him that she can't stop thinking about him. Sometimes in my dreams, you're all naked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, well, okay.
I do like the line where he's talking about that she used to be a man-killing demon thing, which, to be fair, is as much my issue as it is yours. It's just very like, true. It's like a very genuine delivery. And like, there's one line later that I kind of, it is like my one ugh Xander moment of the episode. But mostly I just find Xander like really charming in this episode, because Anya is so very forward. And he's just like trying to live his life as a recent high school graduate who has no life. But yeah, he's just like, you know, we gotta slow down. We gotta, you know, these things develop in their own time. And she's just like, how? And he's just like, it just happens. You know, he's just like,
it just does.
Let it happen organically. And she's just like, I don't get it.
And then we're back to Buffy and Parker, and he has walked her to the dorm room. And he's just about to kiss her. And I find myself curious, if she had went ahead and slept with him, like, that night, would he have still taken her to the party that he asked her to?
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. Is he that level of jerk wad? Of poop head?
See, I think he,
whatever
I think he
whatever insult we're going to throw at him.
So then Oz and Willow run up. And they're telling Buffy about Harmony and how she's different.
Mm-hmm.
And paler. And then Buffy, like, kind of figures it out really quick, I guess, because Willow is holding her neck.
Yeah.
And she goes, the puppy, the angry puppy. And Oz is just like, oh, okay. Yeah, we came to warn you about the angry puppy. I love Oz. And
Oz killing
like,
it.
Okay.
Such a supportive friend. Just like, yes, yeah. This, yes. Uh-huh.
Yep. So then he leaves and they go inside and start talking about Harmony and that she has a boyfriend. And Oz mentions that Devin dated her for a while, but she was too flaky for him. And then yeah. Buffy says that a guy who dates Harmony while dead must be the most tolerant guy in the world.
Yeah. Oh, and then we have our reveal. Spoiler, it's Spike. So Spike's in this episode too. I knew Spike and Harmony came back in this episode. And then you had the Anya reveal for me earlier. I was just like, man, this is like a... This episode's just like popping off with all of its returns, like all these people coming back. And I'm just having a great time.
It's a fun episode.
It really is. Except for all of the things that I hate about it. But the in spite of all of the things that I hate about this episode, it's really fun. Like, Parker is Parker, and we all understand the Parkerness of Parker. But still, this is a very enjoyable episode, even with that whole thing. Oh, but yes. So Spike is there. They're trying to locate something. It's a ring. They don't even
it's
know
the
it's a
gem
ring.
Of Amara.
They don't know
they
it's
don't
a
know
ring.
It's a rig yet. Yeah.
But anyway, they're trying to find the location of it. He's talking to one of the lackeys and they're trying to pinpoint the location. And the lackey's just like, yeah, I'm sure it's here. And Spike slams him against the table and says, you better be more than sure. And he's like, I swear. And then Harmony comes in and asks when Spike's going to kill Willow. Like, he's going to be tonight.
You got to kill Willow for me.
And I want you to say, this is for Messy with my sweet girl, and then, you know, and then she, like, bites his shoulder, and it's just the best thing ever.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about the Spike and Harmony relationship probably more in season 5 than I am in season 4, because in season 4, it's just kind of like a fun thing they do as a one-off bit, and then in season 5, they actually explore it a little bit more. But, you know, James Marsters is such a powerhouse. Like, just a phenomenal actor. And to find someone who can, like, match his energy and, like, just steal a scene away from him repeatedly is amazing. And, man.
Yeah, I wonder if they're friends.
They
seem like they should be friends.
Yeah, I mean,
I
know he's talked before about being pretty close friends with Juliet Landau, but I'm not sure about Mercedes. But man, and I had conversations about, let me verify, what's Mercedes' last name?
McNabb,
yes. Okay. She was one of the ones, I think, that had auditioned for Buffy originally, and then they brought her in just kind of to be the side character that developed more and more. But like, it's so funny because Sarah Michelle Gellar, again, obviously,
perfect
for the role. But I think Mercedes would have done a good job. Like, I think she's my second pick for Buffy if Sarah wasn't in the running, because man, does she just have a range to her that you don't really realize until you get into these cooler storylines with her later on. Like, just a powerhouse. And again, trying anybody that can act against James Marsters and steal a scene away from James Marsters is amazing.
You're not wrong.
So Spike, in his frustration, turns to Harmony and kind of tries to explain the situation, that they're very close and they don't need anything to, like, ruin this. I like that he says, I'm not killing the Slayer's best friend because that would tend to announce my presence. Not that, not like, I'm not going to kill her, or I'm not going to kill one of the Slayer's friends, or I'm not going to kill one of the Scoobies. Like, he has enough intimate knowledge about the Scooby gang. He's just like, yeah, Willow and Buffy are besties.
Yeah, like, we're not going to do this.
So Spike's very, very short with Harmony. She keeps bringing up, she never gets taken out. And like, he was going to show her all these things and all of this stuff that she's just whining about, and he's just getting more and more annoyed. And then finally, after sending her off to go feed from Brian, who's chained to the wall.
I don't like this one.
I don't like
he's
this.
Perfectly fresh.
He does not look fresh.
No, he does not look fresh at all.
He does not look fresh at all. But anyway, he goes over to her and gets very upset about all of this. And she's just, she plays into it as if it's him coming on to her. And it's just like, oh, right here, right in front of, is Brian the, Brian may be the lackey's name. I don't know. I just saw Brian and I thought it was the guy's name because she said that she had a math class with him. So I thought she was on a first name basis with the victim. But it might be the vampire that's in the room. I just like to think that Harmony gets to be on a first name basis with her prey before she bites them. She went after Willow. It makes sense. She's just going after people in high school that she wanted to pick on. So anyway, they have this whole back and forth. And finally, Spike says that he's going to take her somewhere nice. So he takes her to a frat party.
Well, yeah, that's somewhere nice. And he's like not really wanting to pretend he's not there to the Slayer because he goes directly to her.
He goes directly to like the campus that she's currently attending school at.
Yeah.
Spike, so at the party. You too okay. Obvious.
Oh, when I was doing stuff for this episode, I saw a thing where Spike actually said in an interview that from the very beginning, from the very first episode, he played it like he was attracted to Buffy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like, I didn't know that until I saw it just a few days ago that he played it from the very beginning like he was attracted to Buffy. And I'm like, huh, well, makes, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so then we cut to the frat party, and Buffy and Parker are walking around. Parker asks her if she wants to dance, and she's like, no, let's have a meaningful talk instead, which I don't really get. Like, it's not funny.
It's the thing that gets me, again, is the amount of times that every little thing that Buffy says, no matter how funny or not funny it actually is, because Buffy's sense of humor has definitely been shown over the years to be a little unique to Buffy.
True.
But he is like laughing every time, and it's just kind of, it almost reminds me of like Cordelia's like fake laugh. Mm-hmm. That she's like, this is how you get boys. And I'm just like, ah, this is Parker's version of that. But he's just like, he does that same little like slight giggle and he like tilts his head down. He's just all cute and shy, right? Yes.
Well, Harmony and Spike now walk up to Buffy. And like, they literally just walk right up to her with the not so fresh guy, like holding him up. And I'm assuming he's not dead. He's just unconscious, which makes no sense because, like, at the hospital, he's going to tell everybody about how they took him underground and chained him up and fed on him for days.
Is this the same guy that was chained underneath?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, God. That doesn't make any sense. I feel like
it's the same guy.
It could be. I didn't look at the guy enough to see if it was the same actor, but like I just always assumed this was a random frat guy at the party that they grabbed.
Okay, I'm not going to guarantee it because now I'm like doubting myself. Yeah. But I have always thought that this was the same guy, and I think he's wearing the same clothes.
It could be. It could be like some kind of sick game they thought about. I don't know.
It's like almost like they're returning him or something. Yeah, and it's like, you can't do that. You have to kill him. Vampires don't feed on him for a little while and then let them go.
Not until season 5 when we get to that episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so yeah, they run into each other and Buffy like pauses and realizes who it is and who he's with. And this whole exchange is just delightful.
Can we talk about how petty Harmony is at the very beginning with telling her what a cute outfit she has last year? Yeah.
Oh.
And then Spike calls Parker the new boy and refuses to shake his hand. And then starts saying how we met. A funny story. Spike talking to Buffy about mm-hmm. Harmony. And then throws the guy, who may or may not be the person from the sewer with them, into Harmony and the others, and runs away and leaves Harmony there.
Oh, like, yeah.
That never actually gets addressed, that he just runs away from her at the party and leaves Harmony.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently it doesn't bother her because we never see her bring it up. Then Buffy runs after Spike. Then Harmony comes out. They're talking about Drusilla, and Harmony shares that Drusilla left Harmony for a fungus demon, which I think we already knew. I don't know if they're talking about...
So, like...
it again. Like, if he went and got Drew back, because that what he was supposed to do at the end of that episode in season 3, and then she dumped him again for a fungus demon?
That's the thing, because it's a chaos demon.
Later.
The first time it was a chaos demon.
Okay, so this time it was a fungus demon.
Yeah, apparently. Maybe they got back together and then she found a fungus demon that she liked.
Yeah, it never really explains if it's talking about the first time and they got the demon wrong, or if they got together and she dumped him again.
Yeah. It could just be Harmony just being like, yeah. It's some kind of gross demon.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. They're both gross.
Yeah.
Then Spike grabs her and says, "We're going." And then she says, "You're going to be sorry when we get the Gem of Amara." And I'm like, "You are useless, Harmony." Useless.
This entire time he's just like, "Buffy can't know we're here, and she can't know why we're here, and we have to stay hidden." And then they go out and she's just like, "Here's why we're here."
Yeah.
Bless her.
Yeah.
Not literally though, because I think that hurts vampires. And I like her too much.
Okay, so then some wonderfulness happens, because it's just awesome. We are in Xander's bedroom in the basement of his parents' house. And he is, for some reason, putting up a disco ball.
Yes. He's making it homey.
He's making it homey with a disco ball. And then someone knocks, and it's Anya. And Xander's mother sent her around. Yeah. And he is supposed to add fabric softener to the washer when the timer goes off.
I love Anya. Just her pursuit of Xander is so strong in this episode that she just randomly appears multiple times in places that don't make sense.
She's looking for Xander.
She is just like constantly like, "All right, I'm going to go talk to Xander. All right, I'm going to go talk to Xander. I will track him down."
Yeah. And there is so much that does not make sense about Anya this season. Mm-hmm. Like, where does she live? What does she do for a living? Where does she work? None of it makes sense. Also, now let's pretend that we do not know any of Anya's backstory from season 7. Because during this episode, we didn't.
Yes.
Is she a virgin?
Just this episode in isolation? Would I assume that she's a virgin?
Well, she was a demon, right? And then she became a human. And it's only been, what, a less than a year?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know any of her backstory right now.
So... I guess the question is, do we think she's had sex since becoming a human again? Right. More than anything.
Yeah, because she told Xander she was attracted to him, they went to prom, and then she disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something I've always wondered in this episode. Now, then in season 7, we find out her backstory, and we realize she was a human and married before she became a demon, so obviously she's not. But, in this, it's weird, right? Because she would be, new to... everything.
Yeah. I think she's so far removed from that, her human life before, that it would all seem new. I mean, I don't know. Virginity in its own right is a construction and stupid to a degree. But yeah, she
100% agree, but during this.
I doubt that since becoming mortal again, which is like a rebirth for her, I doubt that she has had sex. I think that this is the first time that she has had sex since becoming mortal again. Because
technically she is.
So part of Anya's story that also is confirmed in season 7 is that she's kind of directionless for most of her life. She just... find something to latch onto, and when becoming
human,
you can
really see that.
Yeah,
when
becoming human, it's Xander, and it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is very evident in this episode. She's just like, "I think about you all the time. I dream about you. I feel like I just need to get you out of my system. So let's do this." And then she gets very upset when he doesn't really say the right things afterwards and stuff like that. She's very pro Xander, and Xander is her life.
Mm-hmm.
Anya's going to be an interesting character to dissect going forward, because she's wildly inconsistent, but man, when she's done right, she is one of my favorites. Like, she could have been, like, running for favorite character for me if she was more consistent, but she's just so wildly inconsistent, and it frustrates me. So she gives her a little, like, yeah, I'm just wanting to talk more kind of stuff. And he offers her a crayon apple and she's like, sure. And he turns around to the fridge to get the drink. And as you see him reach into the fridge, you can see just her legs in the frame and then her dress drop around her ankles and Xander turn around. And just in like one of the most beautiful comical frames ever, squeeze the juice box with such force that it's just spurting out the top. The construction, the direction, and the execution of that scene is marvelous.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
And then Buffy's at a payphone, those things. She's calling Giles, telling him about Spike being back in town, that he's with Harmony, and that they ran away, and that she said something about the Gem of Amara. Giles is like, well, that's just, you know, a myth. It's like the Holy Grail for vampires. It doesn't exist. And Buffy's like, well, Spike seems to think it does, and he thinks it's in Sunnydale. So Giles says he'll look into it and that Buffy should go to bed because she's done all she can for the night. And then Buffy's like, yes, sleepy, yawn.
So then we are at Harmony and Spike, and they're in their bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Spike is trying to read.
Spike has replaced Angel as the every now and again, I just need to be shirtless for no reason guy on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. This is the official trait. Passing the torch, right? You know, this is officially this moment.
Yeah.
David Boreanaz is not on the show anymore. We had to have somebody.
Harmony is asking if Antonio Banderas is a vampire and can she make him a vampire? And also Melanie and his kids.
Yes.
Which I assume Melanie is his wife. I don't really know.
Well, and it's Spike who knows that. It's Spike who knows that. Because he's just like, yeah, you know what? Yeah, go do that. Take your time. Do Melanie and the kids as well. And I'm just like, Spike, I love you so much.
Yeah. And then she chatters some more and he tells her to shut up. And she starts trying to seduce him, saying, what are all these blue veins for? I'm covered with them. And then Spike, you can tell he gets turned on and gets in bed with her. And I like how the transcript says they nuzzle. It's like, they nuzzle. And I'm like, well, okay.
It's adorable.
Yeah. Spike mentions that he has an extra set of chains.
Yeah, for nuzzling.
And Harmony's like, Harmony is, no, just because Dorcas went in for that. And he tries to make her say Drusilla, and she just keeps saying Dorcas. Mm-hmm. And so weird sex talk, but yeah, they're weird.
It works for them. Yeah. I'm not going to kink shame.
And then we're back to Xander and Anya, and she's still naked, but she's like, okay, well, and now we're satisfied and we're going to live separate lives and interests.
No, it's not there yet. They still have to have the conversation that leads up to the sex. Oh, wait, no, that's right. What?
Yeah.
Oh, after sex, she says, I'm over you now. That's right. So she gives this whole spiel. Okay.
Okay, I was thinking this was after the sex, but it's not. They still haven't had sex yet.
She's just talking about this because I, like, when I heard that, I was just like, no, she says that after sex, but she doesn't. But it sounds like it would be something she would say after sex.
Yeah. She's saying that after we do this, we'll be fine. And she's like, we'll have sex and then we'll all be fine again. And that this is how she's going to get him out of her mind.
Yes. She thinks it's a workable plan. And like just the point of fact nature of presenting all of this is so great.
The crux of this plan is
sexual intercourse. I've said it like a dozen times.
Uh-huh. Just working through a little hysterical deafness here.
I think it's the secret to getting you out of my mind. Putting you behind me. Behind me figuratively. I'm thinking face to face for the event itself.
I love it. It's so funny.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And then Xander gets kind of misogynistic here. And he's like, I don't know about this. And I'm actually turning into a woman as I say it. But sex is about expressing something.
Yeah. Ugh, Xander. That's my ugh, Xander.
Yeah. You didn't have to say that.
He had to have at least one ugh.
Yeah. And then Anya's like, yeah, but we have these interlocking bodies and we should interlock.
Please remove your clothing now.
Yeah, please remove your clothing now, Xander. And the amazing thing, still more romantic than Faith.
Mm-hmm.
And then she reminds him about the fabric softener again.
Like, just, what a woman. What a woman.
Yeah. She's like, I would like to have sex. We will continue on with our lives.
I am presenting to you all of the ways in which I am incredibly out of your league and also offering you sex. Just take it, man. Yeah. I am giving you every bone there is to give.
So, yeah, we leave with the impression that they are about to have sex.
First fabric softener, then sex. Priorities.
Well, of course. Yeah, yeah.
They're already an old married couple. Oh, and yeah, we're back to the party. And this lovely pair we love so much, Buffy returns. And kind of tries to explain that, you know, the English guy's an old friend and he's just not supposed to drink. And he's just like, oh, well, you're just trying to do something good for your friend. And I'm just like, what happened to the dude that they just dumped?
Yeah, where
Why didn't
think?
That raise any quit? Like, Parker, like, just didn't even, like, so they left their friend behind here and he's, like, unconscious. I don't think he's in a good way. No. That's completely
like,
ignored.
Take him to the ER or something.
And so here we get one of our first occurrences of somebody assuming that Buffy and Spike are dating or have dated.
Yes.
And the reaction that Sarah Michelle Gellar gives is just so great. Just such hysterical laughter at the prospect of going out with Spike. That would never happen.
No, not ever.
Never.
Not in 2 years. Feels like it's longer, but it's 2 years.
Yeah. And so they continue to have their date. They go and they dance. And while they're dancing, I'm gonna throw out the song. There's 7 songs in this episode, by the way. I'm gonna try to add them all to the playlist when I get around to updating the playlist. But this is the one that everybody remembers, which is Lucky by Biff Naked. They're the ones that have been performing at this frat party. They have like 3 songs in here, but this is the one that everybody calls out. It's like when people are just like, what's some of your favorite songs you discovered through Buffy? This one almost always gets a mention. But I just want to take a second here because I've never paid too close attention to the lyrics, and I'm just going to read out a couple of the lyrics because this is so interesting to be playing when Buffy's having her first like sexual encounter past, like, post-Angel, right? So the lyrics are, it was a Monday when my lover told me, never pay the Reaper with love only. What could I say to you except I love you and I'd give my life for yours? And then later on it says, the first time we made love I wasn't sober. How can I ever love another when I miss you every day? Remember the time we made love in the roses? How can I ever get over you when I'd give my life for yours? And so this is the song that plays while she, dances with Parker. They have their conversation, this whole, like, bit, and then later have sex. Like, this song is, like, throughout all of this. And so I was reading those lyrics, and I was remembering the point out of the scar and, like, her literally giving her life for Angel in that. And then I read these lyrics, and I was just like, oh, yeah, that's a good pick for this. If you go back for all of this, you're just like, yeah, that's interesting. To have a little weird, like, Bangel feels that I have reading these lyrics during all of this.
Yeah.
How could she ever love another? Aw. So, yeah, this is a great song and a lot of people's favorites when it comes to, like, discovered music through Buffy. So I felt like I had to take pause and highlight this one specifically. But there's like, 6 other songs in this episode. It is very music heavy. So, yeah, they dance. They kind of talk about majors and that such stuff that college students talk about. And then they start to kiss. And Parker's like, oh, is this okay? It's your choice. You know, which I do think that at least Parker is the kind of manipulator that if Buffy would have been like, you know what, I'm done, I'm walking away, he would have just moved on to his next target. I don't think he is forceful with girls, but I think he manipulates them.
I don't think he would ever force her. But I do see him as the type that if she had been like, no, let's wait a little bit longer, he would have been like, kind of, oh, I thought you knew how to live for the moment like me. Or something like that.
Yeah.
You know?
He might have either
been
dropped.
Like, okay. With
yeah.
It.
He might have dropped her sooner, or he might have strung her along. So, like, I don't know what kind of commitment he has to these conquests. Like, how long? And it very much appears, I mean, he was definitely doing it last episode.
And
with Kathy as well, that he would pursue multiple women at the same time. There's nothing preventing him from doing that. So, like, it's not like he's got a single person in mind at a time and then moves on to the next one. He's playing the field in as many places as he can. And if one just doesn't really work out for him, I'm sure he just kind of moves on and starts ignoring them and ghosting them and all of that classic stuff.
Well, here's my thing, but he's spent a week with Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
I really think he's the type that would have tried to guilt her. I don't think he would have tried to, like, force her, obviously, or anything like that. But I think he would have tried to guilt her and been like, oh, well, you know, making a choice. And if this is your choice, I guess you're not the type of person. I don't know.
Yeah.
He just seems like the type that would say something like that to me. But it also might be that I just really don't like him.
There's always that. I mean, he's not a likable guy.
So we make it obvious that they are, the show makes it obvious that they are having sex with each other. And then, what?
It's just like, a note that I have, and it's more like a note for later, but like, what is it about, like, anytime anybody has sex in this show, it feels like, especially with Buffy, there's got to be like some kind of red sheets involved.
I literally have that. Why red sheets every time? Why? But anyway, while this is happening, we cut to Giles and he's doing his research and looking through books and stuff. And then he calls Buffy and like leaves a message that he really needs to talk to her on her answer machine. And then we're back to Buffy and Parker. And we're in Parker's room and Buffy wakes up in the morning and Parker's gone. And all I've got in my notes that I've got like trauma.
Yeah.
Just trauma. Buffy one day is going to wake up from having sex with somebody and they're going to still be there. Yeah. She starts looking for her clothes and then Parker walks in bringing her coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And here's my thing. Buffy gets really clingy after this. Like, I know that he's trying to put her off and he's mm-hmm. like being standoffish and stuff. And like that kind of probably makes her a little bit more clingy. But this doesn't seem like Buffy.
Yeah.
Because she like immediately is like, what are you doing today? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he says he's going to visit with his mom. And she's like, well, I'm going to leave. But what? Let's talk or something later.
Mm-hmm.
Parker says he'll give her a call. And then you can tell through this that Parker's done. He's like, I've already had her. I'm done.
Yeah.
And I've got, you know, asshole in my notes.
Well,
I hate this next part. Buffy says, great. Oh, one more thing before I go. And Parker, in this knowing tone, says, a kiss. And I'm like, no, you did not.
Mm-hmm.
That drives me crazy when he does that. Because he's just like, oh, I've been here before. I know what she's going to want to kiss before she leaves. And like, he's so done, he doesn't even want to kiss her. It's always the impression I get from that. And she's just like, well, I was going to go with pants, but a kiss is good too. Which is an awesome response to something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I hate the way he says a kiss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just, it just drives me. Rubs it. I don't like that part when he says that.
And so going back to the idea of Buffy being clingy after this, it's interesting because it's all about perspective and manipulation and everything like that. But the version of Parker that he's presenting to Buffy, the life is short, the don't wait for this kind of stuff, is very much a presenting of, you know, if you feel something for somebody, you should want to spend all your time with them. You should have that connection because of the life is short aspect of what he keeps pitching there. Like, I can kind of see that if that's what he's presenting to Buffy, and Buffy reacts really hard to this. Like, you can tell that she, in all of her poor, you know, freshman judgment, really likes Parker and really wants a relationship with Parker. and says it again and again throughout the rest of this episode that she, you know, like, maybe they could still make it work. Like, it's just really terrible stuff. But, like, he's been presenting this, life is short, we need to make our choices. You know, Parker's version of that is, life is short, I'm gonna sleep with as many women as I can. And Buffy's interpretation of what he's presenting, because he's manipulated her and thinking that that's what he's presenting, is that life is short, we shouldn't wait to be with the ones we want to be with. And so Buffy's just like, well, he's of that same mindset, you know, I want to be with him, we've had a great night, like, I want to continue down this relationship. And so she goes along those lines of just like, can we talk later? Can we start actually defining this relationship? Start having those conversations? Because I think Buffy's already at that point, even though they're really only a week into hanging out. You know, I don't even know if you could officially say they're dating at this point. But in Buffy's mind, I think she thinks they are. And she definitely has the idea of some amount of exclusivity to this relationship that Parker clearly doesn't have, which is always why you need to have the talk. Always have the talk. But I'm not convinced that Parker would have been fully honest in that conversation anyway if she had presented that talk. But
not at all.
It is interesting because there is a version of this that exists that Parker is not the bad guy. Like, clearly in this, he is the bad guy. That's the version of the story that they went. But there's also just a danger of going into a relationship too fast with different expectations in mind. And I'm going to get into that, I think, a lot more with Buffy and Riley. Because I think for Buffy and Riley later on, Riley is much more invested in the relationship
than Buffy
is. And that's going to lead to some interesting conversations.
That doesn't really start until season 5, though.
Yeah, there's season 4 is just a weird hot mess with Riley. It's just a weird hot mess. And season 5, like, there's a little bit of glimmer of hope, and then it's just like, nah, we're just getting rid of this character. We've ruined it. We're sorry. We're just going to move on. But anyway, so all of this to say, this is, again, Buffy does act out of character in this. And for the rest of the episode, I really kind of feel that same way that you do. Like, she's being a little too clingy, a little too, like, invested in this Parker guy. And, like, it's just not acting very Buffy-like. And this is the third episode in a row that we've had Buffy not really be Buffy. And I'm really ready to just have Buffy back. Can we just get Buffy?
Yeah.
Please? Anyway, so that's that post-coital. And then we're over to the Xander and Anya post-coital. They're getting dressed. Anya says that she's over Xander now. And he's just like, oh, okay. And then she gets very upset and storms off. And it's great.
Right, but this doesn't make sense to me. It's Anya. Anya says, so I'm over you now. And he's like, okay. And she goes, okay. And you can tell she is mad that he is not saying something to reassure her he's not.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's wanting him to say something like, oh, let's do it again. Let's have a date. Let's not be over or anything like that. But it's Anya. She doesn't know how to play these games. She doesn't understand these games. She wouldn't react this way.
Oh, I think this is she would have spot on.
Really? See, I think she would have been like, you're not over me or something, you know, and I'm not over you. So we're together now. Or so, like, I think she would have been more blunt here and not have, I don't know.
So my...
Does it seem like her to me? Why do you think it's her?
So my thing about Anya at the very beginning, it takes a couple of different twists and turns. And, like, at the very beginning, she's still pretty much just evil demon Anya, right? And then I think the more she settles into the human side, and especially I think when she asks Xander out to prom, is when you really see that this is an ancient demon, 1,000-year-old demon that's been shoved into a teenage girl with all of these teenage girl emotions, and she has no idea how to navigate him.
Yeah.
And so I think she tries to be this disciplined and, like, calculated person, but then occasionally those teenage girl emotions just win. And so this is a moment where I think it's just like her being like, I am freshly human and I don't know how to process emotions, but I know I am upset because you're not acting the way that I think you should act after we have sex. And she storms off. I think it's perfect.
I don't know. I guess in my head, she doesn't act this way.
Yeah.
So we might have to disagree on this one.
That's fine. I'm cool with that. I made my peace.
Okay, so then we cut to Harmony and Spike laying in their bed, and she's drawing a picture on his back that says,
whoever got the job of just like drawing a giant heart on James Marster's back, just one life.
No. Don't do that. Don't do that. In my head, Harmony did it. Harmony did the whole thing. Don't ruin this for me.
It's some makeup person did it. Some set design person did it.
But in my head,
and James Marsters just laid. James Marsters laid down, and they did it. And they're just like, "This is my job today. What a great job I have!"
Like, I would pay them for that job. But in my head, Harmony did the whole thing.
Yes.
And they were there chatting the whole time. So don't ruin this for me. No. There's a makeup artist out there somewhere being like, nope, it was me.
That was me.
It was me.
It's my heart on James Marsters' back. Yeah. You can't take that away.
Yeah. Spike says he's going to go back to work. And Harmony says, you love that tunnel more than me. I know this whole episode is about feelings and emotions and relationships not working out and everything. Mm-hmm. But it frustrates me, and it might be, but I'm just a very blunt person, and it's probably the autism, but I do not like how any of the women are acting in this episode. Like, all of them are just pretending so much. You love that tunnel more than me.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, it's just, and then Buffy with being so clingy, even mm-hmm. though she's being sincere, she's being real clingy, and I'm just like, y'all just tell them what you want. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a weird.
I'm very unromantic in that way because I'm just like, I want this. You know?
They kind of overdo this weird scorned women thing that they do in this episode. And then they have the moment at the very end of the three of them walking. But it's like very much a, like I said at the beginning, an episode about different expectations or different desires in a relationship. Like, all three of these women really want this relationship to work out, and all three of these men are either manipulating, abusive, or just confused and confounded in Xander's case. And it's just, it's such a weird, like, I'm not really sure the theme came together completely on it. Of this idea of an imbalance in the relationships. And I think if you had just had one of these roles flipped to where it was the guy that wanted the relationship more than the girl, it wouldn't feel nearly as weird or nearly as sexist as it does. But it really just feels like a bunch of whiny women and a bunch of misogynistic men and abusive men. And just like, it just, it's not a great look.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. We have this lovely moment though when Buffy returns to her dorm and just starts to undo the straps of the back of her shirt, and then Giles is just like, and she's just like, oh. Quickly redoes her top.
And then Giles says, oh, good morning. And she goes, I was studying at the library all Saturday night. And then she's just like, you know what? I'm an adult and it's none of your business what I do. And Giles is just so amazingly unconcerned.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good to hear. Can we talk about this now? Like, he doesn't care. He's just like, whatever. And then Willow behind Giles' back be like, what happened? She's like, keeps mouthing stuff, wanting Buffy to try or tell her something when Giles is looking straight at Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just funny. This is all just so Giles can say that Spike might know where the Gem of Amara is, and Buffy can say, why don't you guys go try and locate it, and I'll try to find Spike. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's all that this was for. So yeah, then Willow and Buffy talk about Parker and how it was nice and he's going to call. And Willow's like, I love this part. Don't you love this part? And I'm like, you've been with Oz, Willow. That's it. Oz.
And to be fair, like, I'm not sure how much Buffy's really gotten this part.
Yeah.
Buffy's just kind of okay. Like, I guess I do.
Then we have a lot of back and forth scenes, but we go to back to the tunnel where it's Spike and Harmony and the other like nerdy vampire. And Spike's talking about how close they are and tells Harmony that she can't leave the tunnel. No one can leave. And she's like, but you said you'd take me places. You said we'd go to France and now I can't even leave the lair. And, he kind of.
The way that Spike. The lackey vampires are just like, ugh, and walk off.
Yeah. Well, Spike then just kind of goes off on her about how, like, nothing matters except this gym. And stop talking about sodding France and all this other stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we're at Buffy, and she's walking around campus showing picture of Harmony to everybody. And then Spike's drilling in the tunnel, and then we're back to Buffy, and it's night. And she's on a payphone checking her messages. And then Spike again. And he breaks through. And then Buffy on the answer, looking at the answer machine. And then Spike again.
Yeah.
He's climbing into the crypt. It goes back and forth there for a little bit.
It's just Buffy being sad and Spike working a power drill. And I'm just like, you know what?
I'm good with this.
It's
both
fine.
Of these
it's fine. Yeah. I'll take it. So yeah, Spike makes it into the crypt and he sees this large green ornamental necklace and like says it's real. And then Harmony just appears out of nowhere and like actually I think kind of scares Spike. He makes him jump a little yeah. bit. And she's just like, ooh, pretty stuff. Can I take? And he's just like, sure, I don't care. And so he has this moment with this necklace where he's just like touching it, feeling it, trying to feel the power. He rips it off of the corpse that it's on and then dons it. And something happened in this moment that I have never made a connection to. And it's one of those accidental foreshadows that I'm not sure I've ever heard anybody call out. But he puts on the necklace, right? And he has his whole like little weird acting stuff and things like that. Wearing this giant ass amulet, right?
Yeah.
You see where I'm going? And Harmony's just like, I thought you would look different, like glow or something. And I'm just like, oh my God.
But they couldn't have known then.
No, there's no way, but it's just so good.
Yeah, but they didn't know then. There's no way.
That's why I called it accidental foreshadowing. And Buffy is just ripe with it. It's so good. Yeah. Oh man. But when I saw that, I was just like, oh my God.
I like the part where he's like all dramatic and rips it off the skeleton. And she's like, ew, like you're too good to work a class. Love that. I love that part.
Calling him out. You go, girl.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And he picks up a cross and it burns his hand. So that is not the gem that makes him invincible.
Nope. It's just a very, very fashionable necklace. It's just a very fashionable necklace.
Like, even if I was a vampire, I would be like, let's collect all this jewelry in a big bag and we're going to sell some of it. Because, like, you know. Why not?
Why not? It's you have eternity. Take some time to like loot.
Or an investment portfolio. as Cordy says. Harmony goes back after that. She kind of starts playing with the jewelry and talking about, hey, maybe it's worth money. That would be something. And then we could go to France. I always wanted to go to France. And she's just chattering. And Spike stakes her.
Yeah.
But she's fine.
Yeah.
The wound heals immediately and he realizes that she is wearing the gem. And he automatically realizes it's the ring she has on when she has on a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah. She's like decked out and he's just like, oh, nope, this is it. This is the one.
It's the ring. Yeah.
And wouldn't it have been great if it was the tiara thing that she was wearing, though?
I wanted to
see that version of the Gem of Amara.
They could have at least had him try that first.
Yeah.
Yeah. He tries to take it off her hand and she rips it off and throws it at him and tells him to take it and get out. And he's like, yeah, I think I'll go outside. And he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're at Joss's apartment.
Oh, my God. For one of the most genuine, just beautiful moments.
Love this scene.
Okay, either I'm borrowing all your albums or I'm moving in.
Well, there are more important things than records right now.
More important than this one?
I suppose an argument could be made for...
Whoa, Giles has a TV. Everybody, Giles has a TV. He's shallow like us. I gotta admit, a little disappointed.
Well, maybe it doesn't work. It's like art.
And in breaking local news, area residents face traffic disruptions...
Public television.
It's just an amazing scene.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And they turned it on to see the news talking about how part of the roadway near the campus has collapsed from underground tunneling. And they immediately realize it's Spike.
So Giles gives all these instructions of, like, you know, realizing that it's Spike. And then he's just like, Xander, find Buffy and meet us there. And so he starts, like, all of them leave. And Xander's, like, sitting and, like, watching the TV and, like, takes a moment to realize that they've all left and, like, starts to follow them out, but then keeps turning back. He's just like, Xander, have you never seen television before?
Yeah.
He's like, what are these moving pictures? What? I can't leave them.
And then we have the heartbreaking scene.
Can we just skip it?
Yeah, let's skip it.
I just hope that Katie Loomis is smarter. I hope that she figures it out before Parker gets... Like, I mean, this has got to be a good tell here, right? Buffy
Why does she not realize here?
She should really have this figured out, right? She'd be like, all right, done with this guy. I'm going to go to class.
Yeah, like, oh, you're going to be late for class. Why don't you go and I'll catch up? And I'm like, really?
Oh, God.
I'll let you do this one.
Yep. So Katie leaves and Buffy's like, she's a friend of yours. And Parker's like, yeah, you'd like her a bunch.
Like, sure you would.
Oh, man. And so Buffy's just like, so why didn't you call? And he's just like, oh, it's only been a few days. And she's just like, well, do you maybe want to, like, do something? And he's just like, yeah, we could. Just like suddenly the most casual of guys. No intensity that he had before the event. She was just like, well, what about tonight? He's just like, oh, I got plans.
Yeah.
And then Buffy says the thing that makes me want to punch Parker in the face so hard.
Yes. And it doesn't seem like Buffy in it. Oh, I hate it.
Kills me.
Parker, did I do something wrong?
No, Buffy, you're perfect. Stop it.
You didn't do anything wrong. You're a goddess. Leave. He doesn't deserve you.
And it's just
Parker's
like,
no, didn't you have fun? I had fun.
And she's just like, you had fun? And it's just like, clearly, like, Buffy's in a completely different spot and Parker's just completely brushing her off. And
like,
he even says, some kind of commitment. This guy needs to be clubbed in the head soon.
He's like, I'm sorry you missed something. I thought things were pretty clear. And I'm like, yeah, it's pretty clear that you acted like you were into her. And then she apologizes.
She does.
Yes. And then when he walks off, she stops and says, Parker, wait, I did this all wrong. And he's just like, nah, it's cool. We'll talk later. I'm like, and Spike is suddenly there and says, wow, that was pathetic, and punches her. It is just like, he's not wrong. That was kind of pathetic. Poor Buffy. And it's, I mean, I get it. She was totally caught off guard.
Yeah.
And I'm not even pretending. I would have probably reacted the exact same way in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what did I do wrong? You know?
Well,
if I was really into him, but oh no, Buffy, you're so much better.
Yeah, and this is one of those episodes that you have to look back and think, okay, she's like 18 here. She's young. Yeah. She's a baby. And like for her one sexual encounter before that, it was deeply intense and based in emotion specifically. Like, I mean, they were so deeply in love before Buffy and Angel had sex. So for Buffy, like, sex is a very deep emotional thing. And mm-hmm. for Parker, it's very casual. And so, like, the fact that she got to this point ready to have sex with Parker means that she really had a sense that there was going to be some kind of commitment, some kind of relationship here, and to be caught off guard and to be blindsided like this way. And after being ghosted for several days.
And both of those things, both of those ways of looking at it are perfectly fine with consenting adults. But here's the thing. Buffy didn't know this. Because Parker was manipulating and tricking her.
Yes.
And in some way, I mean, he came very close to outright lying.
Yes.
And that's why it's not, Buffy did not consent to a one-night stand. Yes. She was tricked into thinking it would be more.
Yes. And that's where it gets to where, like, Parker's actually just a jerk here. There is a version of this that exists, that does exist in the world, where people go into a relationship, one expecting commitment and monogamy and another one expecting just casual, and they don't communicate that and something happens and then that causes issues and nobody's fully really at fault. It's just a failure to communicate. And that's why, again, I always say it's important to have that conversation as early as possible. But this was Parker leading Buffy on. Parker was not casual at the beginning of this episode. Parker was not casual until after the sex took place, and then Parker became very casual. So there's no defense of Parker in this, but there's nothing wrong with casual sex. And the
long as you are honest about this is what I want casual sex. If I do not want to be in a relationship.
Yeah. And I really get frustrated with the fact that we even did this storyline at all. Because it really presents like this horror story of don't trust people and don't rush into a sexual relationship until you're sure you really know them and stuff like that. Which is valid to an extent, but also not really the messaging that holds up today. Like, I think the stigma of sex happening early on in a relationship being like a bad thing and being like, oh, Buffy, you should have known you rushed into this, is not a message that I like at all. And the fact that they went this route of Buffy kind of rushing into a relationship and the guy being a dirtbag is rough because, one, it's Buffy and we feel for Buffy and stuff like that. But it's also just like a weird, it's not really doing it, but in a way it feels like slut shaming of the nature of Buffy having to feel like she did something wrong and saying she's sorry and all of this stuff. It feels like it's Buffy's fault for misunderstanding, not, and like just everything about how it's presented here just makes me very mad at the writers for deciding to even do this storyline, because I don't think it's necessary by any stretch of the imagination to do this storyline. And I just think it's one of those really of its time storylines that tends to happen. There's definitely the guy you think that's so great that manipulates you and stuff like that. And in a way, that's like, that was kind of the storyline that they've already told. They just told it better and actually did the fantasy spin on it with Angel, right? You know, they had sex and then Angel turned into the bad guy. And that's they told that story already. So why did they need to tell it again with Parker and have it not be supernatural in this? I just don't know. I don't know why it was necessary. It continues to punish Buffy for having sex. And I think that's really annoying to me. It's just, stop punishing Buffy for having sex, please. Let her just have sex and be okay. So, Spike punches Buffy. This very recently, very crowded, you know, campus is now completely empty. Nobody's around.
Yeah, all the people she was showing Harmony's picture to, they're all gone now.
Yeah, like the amount of background actors that existed in the scene between Buffy and Parker, and now there's nobody. It's just always hilarious to me. But yeah, the Spike's there standing in sunlight talking about, like, what a glorious day it is.
Birds singing, squirrels making lots of rotten little squirrels, sun beaming down in a nice non-fatal way. It's very exciting. Can't wait to see if I freckle.
So they fight, and eventually, in some back and forth punches, Spike's knocked down. He jumps back up, and Buffy drives a stake right into his heart, and he says it tickles. And then not only does that confirm that he has discovered the Gem of Amara, but then Spike, in all of his brilliance, points it out, holds it in front of the Slayer, just like, yeah, it's right here. It's this thing.
Yeah, like, why would you show it to her?
Oh, man. And we cut away to Giles, Oz, and Willow getting down into the crypt where Harmony is there, all sad, crying, and saying being a vampire sucks. Aww. And then she kind of vamp faces, and then we cut away to Xander at Buffy and Willow's dorm, and he's trying to get Buffy, knocking loud, shouting her name, and then Anya's there. So Anya's just stalking Xander at this point. She starts to try to explain, like, the illogical route that she's just like, I was looking for you. You weren't in your musty basement. And then he's just like completely ignoring the fact that that she discovered him, like figured out where Buffy and Willow lived and said, that's one of the places he could be. It's like she's just got a list of where could Xander be? Not here. Check that one off. Not here. Check that one off. I'll try Willow and Buffy's next.
A little bit like the robot in season 5.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's got that vibe. Of that, yeah. Like, oh man, yeah, good call out. Like, that is, she is just like,
no, wait, that is season 5, isn't it?
Yeah, the original robot, yeah,
yeah,
the Buffy butt crosses over.
Buffy bot in season 6. I gotcha. Yeah.
Xander asks if she's seen Buffy, and she's just like, no, about what happened. I said I was over, and Xander cuts her off and says, I don't have time, and runs off, and she looks sad, and we're back to Harmony, also just continuing to be sad. She just stood up. She vamped out, and then she just stood up.
But, like, she's just sat there this whole time.
Yeah, like, just put on her vamp face and then just, you know, stood there with them hanging out. Yeah. And
yeah, she's talking about he staked me, and then he tried to take it off my finger. I'd have given it to him.
Yeah.
And then Giles asked, where did he go? And doesn't really get an answer.
Yeah. She just runs off.
Yeah. And then we got Buffy and Spike fighting again.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of winning.
Yeah, he is at this point whooping her ass until he inevitably says the wrong thing.
Emotions.
Yeah.
Like, she's pretty upset right now.
Yep. Okay. So do we want to talk about the specificity in which Spike is taunting Buffy at this point again? Of course, it's sexual in nature. Of course, it's talking about what happened between her and Parker. It's so fitting. And Spike's such an evil douchebag. But also, like, clearly already, yeah. Like, Drusilla spot on. Like, he is in fact, covered with Buffy. And just talking about all of the things to get under Buffy's skin. But everything he's talking about is all sex related. And just continues to dig in as they're fighting. And then it gets to the line of, I wonder what went wrong. Were you too strong? Did you bruise the boy? And then makes the comment that, you guess you're just not worth a second go. Come to think of it, seems like someone else told me that. Who was it? And then he says, oh yeah, Angel. And this is when Buffy does what Buffy does and just miraculously just gets advantage because someone says the wrong thing to her. And it is the most consistent Buffy thing. Someone says something to tick her off and then she's like, all right, I'm winning this fight.
Yep.
And like, in like 3 moves, it's done. Like, she's got him down. She's going to take the ring off. He makes a last ditch effort and she's just like, nope, not falling for it, and pulls the ring off and he runs into cover.
But, yeah, he would have never made it. Yeah. Never made it. Because Angel and Spike are the only vampires in this show that can not immediately burst into flames. Oh. They have time.
Yeah, they can. Back. They can do a casual stroll for a few minutes in the sunlight. They'll be fine. They'll just sizzle a little bit.
Yeah. Now we're back to the whole Scooby gang, and we're at Giles's apartment, and they're kind of staring at the ring sitting in the middle of the coffee table.
Mm-hmm.
And Giles says that they're going to destroy it, and Buffy's like, nope.
Nope.
And Giles says, well, Buffy, any vampire that gets his hands on this is going to be unkillable. Then he's like, oh. And Oz immediately is like, I'm going to L.A. I could go.
Yeah.
I could swing by. And Buffy tells him, thanks. Xander wants to know what's going on. And Willow's like, okay. So She's going to give it to Angel. Be quiet about it.
Yeah, I love that. Just like the way that line is delivered of she's just like, don't make a fuss. Just like, don't Xander this up.
Yeah. Don't Xander this up.
Don't Xander this up. Can we make that a thing?
That should be a thing. That should be a verb.
So this last scene between Buffy and Willow, where Buffy's just continuing to be in her spiral and Willow's trying to claw out of it. And then Willow eventually gets to the fact that, you know, Parker wasn't sweet. He was just saying all those things to make you sleep with him and that he's a poophead. And I love that there's so many things that we want to call Parker. There's so many words that we want to use when referring to Parker. And somehow Willow calling him a poophead just seems fitting.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, just the most understated, like, that's like something that you call, you know, a third grade boy for kicking sand on you.
And it's still perfect, though.
And that's how we describe Parker at the end of this episode. And I love it. Oh, but yeah, it's still like, it's a weird ending because Buffy's still hung up on Parker. And she's just like, maybe we could still make it work out. And Willow's just like, you're missing this whole point here about him being a poophead. There's a lot of deleted scenes in this episode.
Sure.
Like the end of the episode scene between Willow and Buffy had some extra lines. And includes like the, you know, it was safe, just confirming that. So you don't think that Buffy's pregnant. And she's like, yes, it was safe. But then she's like, but it's not that. It's that the whole time I kept thinking, hey, look at me with someone who isn't Angel. Look how much I'm not hung up with Angel anymore. Look how this is not all about Angel. God, how come I didn't see it? And so, like, that kind of explains something about, like, Buffy not acting like herself because she was so much of the mindset of, like, hey, look, I can move on from Angel. I cannot be stuck on Angel.
Yeah.
And I'm really sad that they cut that because I think that would have been an interesting...
That would have been really good, and I wish that had been in
there. Yeah, it would have made more sense to the way that Buffy progressed in this episode. And also, like, the way that Buffy progresses with Riley, I feel. Because I think that Buffy has a more realistic approach to the relationship with Riley, where she's just like, I would like this to not be the let's die for each other kind of love, please. That's exhausting.
I really wish that Buffy one would have been in there.
Yeah.
That would have explained a lot of things.
Her just forcing this relationship as a way of showing that she's over Angel makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. And we cut off to... Buffy walking alone and Anya walking alone and Harmony walking alone, but they're all like really close to each other and just none of them realize that the other person's around.
Yeah, they're
just walking
they're
in a circle.
weirdly
close. Just
and
a weird
episode.
It's like there's lots of stuff that is entertaining about this episode, and like again, like a There's things happening with the cast that I love. I love having Anya back. The way that Emma performs that, you know, obviously Spike and Harmony is something that I never knew I needed until it was there. And I was like, oh, that's so funny. And that's so great. And it's so awful and so toxic and just all of those things. It's great. And then you just have your core cast just killing it. Just like Oz and Giles having their little moment. Just Willow, like, dancing behind Giles, celebrating that Buffy spent the night with Parker, and Giles just being completely oblivious to Willow. Like, there's so many moments where the cast just shines, and you're just like, man, I'm just so excited to continue to watch these characters play off of each other, and it's really setting up some great interactions that we're going to get in season 4, even though season 4 is a hot mess when it comes to, like, the actual plot of season 4. And so in a weird way, I feel like this episode really lays out the groundwork of just like a lot of funny moments, a lot of great interactions, some just brilliant acting through and through, but just like a mess of a plot. And that's this episode. And in fact, this season. And Parker is a poophead.
Parker is a poophead.
All right. Next podcast, we will be discussing In the Dark, which will also have some fun character interactions that I am looking forward to immensely. But yeah, that's it. That's all we have for this episode. You got any other thoughts on this episode?
Nope, we're good.
We're good. We're going to end this with Parker was a poop head.
Parker was a poop head.
Oh, man. That's a good way to end it. Well, we thank you all so much for listening. And this is where we say bye. Did you say bye? I didn't hear your bye.
Bye. Sorry.
I'm leaving it in. It's perfect. We'll do it live.